Blog Talk Radio.
Yeah, good evening. This is Ellie Steele. Tonight, I wanted to read an essay from another one from Ralph Waldo Emerson. And I'm hoping that
read a work
very long work. When you read something that's 150 years old, it tends to have a bit of a translation. But this particular one is called Truth. And I'm going to read it. In light of what's happened and the deception today, there's no truth. I mean, there's just no truth out there. You have to search for it so hard to find it. And, well, I hope this will help. No, it might. I'm not guaranteeing it that it'll shed light, but Emerson usually does shed light on these areas. And so let me go on. Let me begin. The Teutonic tribes have a national singleness of heart, which contrasts with the Latin races. The German name has a proverbial significance of sincerity and honest meaning. The arts bear testimony to it. The faces of clergy and laity in old scriptures and illuminated missals are charged with earnest belief. Add to this hereditary rectitude the punctuality and precise dealing with commerce creates, and you have the English truth and credit. The government strictly performs its engagements. This doesn't happen anymore, folks. It just doesn't happen anymore. The government strictly performs its engagements. The subjects do not understand trifling on its part. When any breach of promise occurred in the old days of prerogative, it was resented by the people as an intolerable grievance. Similar to today, but we have no, for some reason, the people were much more militant, more revolutionary, more passioned than we are today. And in modern times, any slipperiness in the government in political faith or any repudiation or crookedness in matters of finance would bring the whole nation to a committee of inquiry and reform. Now that should have happened in our case, in this TARP program and everything. And they had bullshit committees and, you know, congressional hearings and whatnot, but nothing happened. Private men keep their promises never so trivial. Down goes the flying word or the tablets and they end indelible as doomsday book. Their practical powers rest on their national sincerity. Veracity derives from instinct and marks superiority in organization. Nature has endowed some animals with cunning as a compensation for strength withheld, but it has provoked the malice of all others, as if avengers of public wrong. In the nobler kinds, where strength could be afforded, the races are loyal to truth, as truth is the foundation and social state. Beasts that take no truce with man do not break faith with each other. I'll read that again. Beasts that make no truce with man do not break faith with each other. That's the bankers, buddies. They make no truce with anyone. So, you know, they break faith and do not break faith with us or with other beasts. This said that the wolf, who makes a cachet of his prey and brings his fellows with him to the spot, if on digging it is not found, is instantly and unresistingly torn to pieces. Oh, I wish that was happening here. English veracity seems to result on a sounder animal structure, as if they could afford it. They are blunt in saying that they think sparing of promises, and they require plain dealing of others. We will not have to do with a man in a mask. Let us know the truth. Draw a straight line. Hit whom and where it will. So those are wonderful days. doesn't happen anymore. Alfred, whom the affections of the nation make the type of their race, is called by his friend Asser, the truth speaker. Geoffrey of Monmouth says of King Aurelius, uncle of Arthur, that above all things he hated a lie. The Northman Guttorm said to King Olaf, it is royal work to fulfill royal words. And the mottos of their families are monetary proverbs, as Fairfax, say do of the Fairfaxes, say and seal of the House of Thanes. To be king of their word is their pride. When they unmask, can't they say, the English of this is, and to give the lie is the extreme insult. The phrase of the lowest of the people is honor bright, and their vulgar praise, his word is as good as his bond. They hate shuffling and equivocation, and the cause is damaged in the public opinion on which any paltering can be fixed. Now, I want to put that into preference and bring that up to date about 150 years and the 200 years to the point where we are now, and everybody lies. All the politicians lie. All of the officials lie. All the corporate leaders lie. All the people lie. People lie, and lie continually. There is no integrity anymore. I mean, have you ever got something free, you know, and then read the terms and conditions? I mean, it's just unbelievable. There is no truth in advertising. There's no truth in government. There's no truth in the school systems. There's no truth in anything anymore. Everything's been revised and built upon. Napoleon has a wonderful quote, and it says, "History are lies that are agreed upon," and that is so true. I mean, that's so true. That's what history has become. Even Napoleon in his day, but I mean, all the way up. Now, you know, there are some people that believe that, you know, their religions are true, or the words of whatever are true, you know. But they're not. They're not. And we, as individuals, have been endowed by the Creator with the ability to see truth, right? However, we believe anything. I mean, it's just crap what we believe. And I mean, we can believe anything of anybody told to us. And because people are essentially lazy and they do not want to research. They do not want to question some authority. Say, oh, it's an authority, so, you know, he's an expert. I'm not. Well, most people know when they're being lied to. You know, you would think that an older person would be wiser, but the older people are continually being lied to and swindled out of their monies. And, you know, there's just such a lack of integrity out there. There always has been, but, you know, I think as we enter the 20th and 21st century, That all became diminished. It all got lost in the shuffle somewhere. And no man can take another man's word anymore, you know. It's a sad thing. It's a horrible, sad thing. And a horrible loss for humanity to lose the truth, you know. And for it to be so maligned and so easily maligned by let me get back to let me get back to this essay. To be king of their word is their pride. When they unmask Kant, they say the English of this, and to give to the lie is the extreme insult. The phrase, of the lowest of the people is honor bright in their vulgar praise. His word is as good as his bond. They hate shuffling and equivocation, and the cause is damaged in the public opinion on which any paltering can be fixed. Even Lord Chesterfield, with his French breeding, when he came to define a gentleman, declared that truth made his distinction, and nothing ever spoken by him would find so hearty a suffrage from his nation. The Duke of Wellington, who had the best right to say so, advises the French General Kellerman that he may rely on the parole of an English officer. The English, of all classes, value themselves on this trait, as distinguishing them from the French, who in the popular belief are more polite than true. An Englishman understands, avoids the superlative, checks himself in compliments, alleging that in the French language one cannot speak without lying. Well, in the English language, that has become the case as well, and England is probably one of the greatest lying countries ever, that's why I say, this is an interesting comparison to today. But Emerson, being the idealist, that he believed in Englishmen's honesty, I guess. I don't know how or why, but according to this, he seems to have. They love reality and wealth, power, hospitality, and do not easily learn to make a show and take the world as it goes. They are not fond of ornaments, and if they wear them, they must be gems. They read gladly in Old Fuller that a lady in the reign of Elizabeth would have as patiently digested a lie as the wearing of a false stone or pendant of counterfeit pearl. They have the eager hunger, or rather the earth hunger, or preference for property and land, which is said to mark the Teutonic nations. They build of stone. Public and private buildings are massive and durable. In comparing their ships, houses, and public offices with the American, it is commonly said that they spend a pound where we spend the dollar. Plain rich clothes, plain rich equipage, and plain rich finish throughout their house and belongings mark the English truth. Yeah. There may be something to that in the sense of the honest Puritan, that kind of thing. But it's very difficult to establish that today, knowing what we know of the English and their conquering and their imperialistic tendencies and how they've lied and cheated and stealed and stolen the world, and the sun never sets on English empires of crack a crap, right? And I don't know. Maybe this is not as good an example. There are, if we can take away the English aspect, then maybe we can see some integrity here. And I have to disagree fully with this with what he's saying. And it may be the old Englishman, but I don't know. Very difficult for me to accept. I'm going to as much as I thought I might read this one, and it seemed to make sense. I'm reluctant to go through it because sometimes I get so lost in my anger. Sometimes I get so damned angry. I just want to shout out. And unfortunately, that screws me up pretty well. I should have more faith in Emerson. He's never let me down before, actually. But I don't know. Maybe I'll continue with this. They confide in each other. And this is truth again, where I left off. They confide in each other. English believe in English. No, that's true. The French feel the superiority of this probity. The Englishman is not springing a trap for his admiration, but is honestly minding his business. The Frenchman is vain. Madame de Staël says that the English irritated Napoleon mainly because they have found out how to unite success with honesty. She was not aware how wide an application her foreign readers would give to the remark. Wellington discovered the ruin of Bonaparte's affairs by his own probity. He augured ill of the empire as soon as he saw that it was mendacious and lived by war. If war do not bring in its sequel new trade, better agriculture and manufactures, but only games, fireworks, and spectacles, no prosperity could support it, much less a nation disseminated for conscripts, which were constantly being drafting and conscripting people. And out of pocket like France. So he drudged for years on his military work at Lisbon, and from this base at last extended his gigantic lines to Waterloo. This is Wellington, of course, that we're talking about. Believing in his countrymen and their syllogisms above all the Europe. At a St. George's festival in Montreal, where I happened to be a guest since my return home, I observed that the chairman complimented his compatriots by saying they confided that wherever they met an Englishman, they found a man who would speak the truth. And one cannot think this festival fruitless if all over the world on the 23rd of April, wherever two or three Englishmen are found, they meet to encourage each other in the nationality of veracity. In the power of saying rude truth, sometimes in the lion's mouth, no men surpass them. On the king's birthday, when each bishop was expected to offer the king a purse of gold, Latimer gave Henry VIII a copy of the Vulgate and a mark at the passage, "Whoremongers and adulterers, God will judge." And they so honor stoutness in each other that the king passed it over. They are tenacious of their belief and cannot easily change their opinions to suit the hour. They are like ships with too much head on to come quickly about. Nor will prosperity or even adversity be allowed to shake their habitual view of conduct. Whilst I was in London, Madame Guizot, arrived there on his escape from Paris in February 1848. Many private friends called upon him. His name was immediately proposed as an honorary member of the Athenaeum, and Mr. Guizot was blackballed. Certainly they knew the distinction of his name, but the Englishman is not fickle. He had really made up his mind. Now, for years, as he read his newspapers, to hate and despise Mr. Guizot, and the altered position of the man as an illustrious exile and a guest in the house made no difference to him, as they would instantly to an American. They require the same adherence, thorough conviction and reality in public men. It is the want of character which makes the low reputation of Irish members. See them, they said, 127 all voting like sheep, never proposing anything, and all but four voting the income tax, which was an ill-judged concession of the government, relieving Irish property from the burdens charged on English. And you see, this was back 150 years ago, and of course everybody knows the Irish are not quite that way any longer, at least the IRA is not. And and if you look in the, I don't know how the Irish members of Parliament are anymore, because I don't follow it, but if you look at the Irish, the British Parliament, it's a pretty rowdy bunch. But unfortunately, you have, they can't be all that rowdy or that righteous, since they kept re-electing Tony Blair, right? One of the biggest murdering bastards that ever walked the face of the earth. I mean, there's a war criminal right up there with G.W. Bush. So I don't think the English have any. Maybe they impressed Mr. Emerson, but you know, I don't think they have any greater adherence to the truth than anyone else, including the French. Right? But the French, unfortunately, have an idiot like Sarkozy. Man, I mean, the naked emperor. I don't know if you've heard the WikiLeaks, but he is considered a naked emperor by the rest of the world leaders. He's a buffoon, you know. A Napoleon wannabe. But these things are, again, I have a tendency to ramble here, but I want to correct this text because I bring it up today. What he's saying, in essence, is true for the character of anyone who believes in the truth. And anyone who believes ferociously in it, as I do, we, not that we can be, you know, saintly and godly and expect to be, you know, all truth. It's impossible, you know, quite frankly. But you're better off avoiding than telling a lie. But there are times when lies seem to be more convenient for the human condition, and that's why it prevails. They call them white lies. But the perhaps the most significant statement about truth, right, has been made by a number of people, and I just happen to have a series of quotes that have always been out been for my most of a good portion of my adult life. And I'd like to, perhaps I could read some of them to you tonight, and that might bring this notion of truth up to date. And the lies, excuse me, I shouldn't say the lies, but the what I'd like to do is prove to you, my audience, the some of the lies, or some of the statements, I should say, that were made by some very powerful people of the 20th and 21st century, and earlier, modern history, if you will. The one that I think. One thing that always amazed me is how people tend to want to believe the media. They want to believe that the media and journalism is true, and, oh, you can't deny this, it's true, you know. And, well, I've been denying the validity of the media reports for the last 10 years, eight that I've been doing this my radio programs and been doing television for 11 years now. So it's like, I've been fighting this most of my life, but never really, these things came to me through my research. And for instance, here's a great one. William Colby, former director of the CIA, stated, "The CIA owns everyone of any significance in the major media." That was a dark quote from him. "The CIA owns everyone of any significance in the major media." Yeah. Now here's one. Here's one of these elite bankers. Probably you might know his name, David Rockefeller, chairman of the board of Chase of Manhattan Bank. "We are grateful to the Washington Post and the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications whose directors have attended our meetings and respected the promises of discretion for almost 40 years. It would have been impossible for us to develop our plan for the world if we had been subject to the bright lights of publicity during those years. But the world is now more sophisticated and prepared to march toward a world government. The supernatural sovereignty of an intellectual elite and world bankers is surely preferable to the national auto-determination practiced in the past centuries." And that was stated by David Rockefeller in the address to a trilateral commission meeting in June of 1991. And he's thanking the Washington Post, the New York Times, Time Magazine, and other great publications for keeping their mouth shut, for not saying anything, or if they said anything, it was a lie. And here is another great quote by another former CIA director, William Casey, from this first staff meeting in 1981. He states, "Well, we'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false." So he's right there telling you, this is the director of the CIA, right, under Reagan, right, is saying that we'll know our disinformation program is complete when everything the American public believes is false. This is lying, folks. This is deceit at the highest levels. And here, now here is a man of honesty. Yes, I say that laughingly because this is what he says. "Look, if you think any American official is going to tell you the truth, then you're stupid. Did you hear that? Stupid. That was stated by Arthur Sylvester, the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs, in 1965. That's right. And I'm going to repeat that because I think it's worth mentioning. Look, if you think any American official is going to tell you the truth, then you're stupid. Did you hear that? Stupid. And that's what Arthur Sylvester stated, who was the Assistant Secretary of Defense for Public Affairs in 1965. Amazing, isn't it? Absolutely, totally amazing. Here's a man who was known for some deceptions, but at the same time, he was known for some wisdom. And that was Ben Franklin. Ben says, this, the U.S. Constitution, is likely to be administered for a course of years and then end in despotism, when the people shall become so corrupted as to need despotic government, being incapable of any other. So that's how much faith he had in the people. The fact that they actually did it, you know, they were actually able to compromise and create a constitution is amazing. But the faith that he had in its ongoing whatever it is, that's what it is. Here's another great quote, and this is by financier. That many of you listening might have heard of. His name was J.P. Morgan, founder of J.P. Morgan and Morgan Financial, one of the recipients, I should say one of the large recipients of the TARP monies. He stated, capital must protect itself in every way. Debts must be collected in loans and mortgages foreclosed as soon as possible. When through a process of law and common people have lost their homes, they will be more tractable and more easily governed by the strong arm of the law applied by the central power of leading financiers. People without homes will not quarrel with their leaders. This is well known among our principal men, now engaged in forming an imperialism of capitalism to govern the world. By dividing the people, we can get them to expend their energies in fighting over questions of no importance to us, except as teachers of the common herd. That was by J.P. Morgan, known agent to the Rothschild fortune. Again, we are duped, you know, by the financiers, by the bankers, by these people. And lies are so commonplace, it is part of the fabric of our laws, of our country, of our, you know, it's, I mean, it is just there. I mean, where is the truth, folks? George Bush, who is probably, in my opinion, the biggest liar that has ever held the office of the president, and he was elected twice, I should say selected twice, because he never legitimately won an election, but because of fraud, the stupidity and the lying and the horrible press that we have in this country, they allowed it to happen. The people just accepted it, and, you know, we nearly lost our country. We probably have because of those horrible 8 years. And the American people were so goddamn stupid that they reelected, you know, a Republican Congress. I mean, what a, American people are just stupid. Just incredibly stupid. Not all of them, but a whole lot of them. And George Bush said, "See, in my line of work, you gotta keep repeating things over and over and over again for the truth to sink in. You kind of catapult the propaganda." Now, Adolf Hitler said, "Make the lie big. Make it simple. Keep saying it, and eventually they will believe it." And his henchman, Nazi propaganda minister Joseph Goebbels, said, "The most brilliant propagandist technique will yield no success unless one fundamental principle is borne in mind constantly. It must confine itself to a few points and repeat them over and over." And he went on to say, as is Joseph Goebbels, master propagandist, the Nazis, "If you tell a lie big enough and keep repeating it, people will eventually come to believe it. The lie can be maintained only for such time as the state can shield the people from the political, economic, and/or military consequences of the lie. It thus becomes vitally important for the state to use all of its powers to repress dissent, for the truth is the mortal enemy of the lie, and thus, by extension, the truth is the greatest enemy of the state." That was by Joseph Goebbels, Nazis, prime minister of propaganda. And I have quite a few here that I wanted to read to you tonight, and we have time. And I hope this will sink in so you realize that we are so screwed, folks, you know, that we have to wake up, realize you can't trust anybody out there telling you crap. Here is none other than the great Senator George, Prescott Bush, the patriarch of the Bush family. Yes, a father to George, to two presidents, and former Skull and Bones president, 1917. Bush family patriarch made the above statement in 1966. Interview on Columbia University's Oral History Project on the Eisenhower administration. Prescott Bush said that the political dictum that had been explained to him by Claire Booth Luce, congresswoman, ambassador and wife of the life of the Time Life media magnate Henry Luce, Skull and Bones, 1920. Now, Prescott Bush was a supporter of Nazism and a financier of Adolf Hitler. He says, "There are three things to remember. Claim everything, explain nothing, and deny everything." This was his dictum. This was his philosophy, right? Was to deceive. The whole concept of his life and what he taught his sons and what he taught his grandsons were to lie. There's three things to remember: claim everything, explain nothing, and deny everything. Now here is another statement by Adolf Hitler. And I think most people listening can agree that Adolf Hitler was probably the most psychopathic, crazy man ever. But he was brilliant in his manipulation of people. And this is what he said. "Through clever and constant application of propaganda, people can be made to see paradise as hell, and also the other way around, to consider the most wretched sort of life as paradise." This is by the great Satan himself, Adolf Hitler. He He also said, it also gives us a very special secret place, our secret pleasure, to see how unaware the people around us are of what is really happening to them. And that says it all, folks. That says it all, because it says it right there. Adolf Hitler said it. You know, we can screw you and make tattoo you and do whatever we do to you. Right? And you can be totally unaware of what's going on. And we sit back and just laugh. Ha ha. What fools. What complete and utter fools the human race is. And likewise, that's Adolf Hitler. Now here is something that I believe is happening today with the religious right, with the Republican Party, and also with the Progressive Party, and with any fanatical group, okay? Fanatical in the sense that, you know, that's all they can believe. Adolf Hitler had his thumb on them as well, and he said, the greatness of these mighty organizations, of every mighty organization embodying an idea in this world, lies in the religious fanaticism and intolerance with which, fanatically convinced of its own right, it intolerantly imposes its will against all others. That's what Hitler did. That's what the American right did. That's what the conservative evangelists do. That's what the Catholics did. And do. And that's what, that's what America does. So, now I'm going to go to a more, a person who we all know and hate, Mr. Bill Clinton. Mr. Bill Clinton said, if the personal freedoms guaranteed by the Constitution inhibit the government's ability to govern the people, we should look to limit those guarantees. He also said, the purpose of government is to rein in the rights of the people. And he said one more thing, which amazes me. We can't be so fixated on our desire to preserve the rights of ordinary Americans. Now get this, the rights of ordinary Americans. So, and he said this, and quoted this in USA Today, March 11, 1993. He actually stated that. And we elected him and re-elected him, and, you know, just a totally amazing how screwed up the American people are. 1992, I voted for George Perot, and just started the protest vote. I hated Bill Clinton and I hated George Bush. So let me go to a even more sinister son of a bitch. Okay, then all of the people above, including Adolf Hitler. And this bastard is still alive and well and kicking today, even though he's in his 80s. That's Mr. Henry Kissinger. He stated, the illegal we do immediately. The unconstitutional takes a little longer. You remember Henry Kissinger as a National Security Advisor and Secretary of State under Richard Nixon? He was also Secretary of State under Gerald Ford. Been an advisor to everyone since then. And I should say, too, that this is fascinating because Goebbels, a Nazi propaganda minister, said it is the absolute right of the state to supervise the formation of public opinion. Government has to formulate public opinion. We hear about it all the time, and we just get herded that way, and we, you know. That's amazing. Now, if you're questioning the fact that, you know, we're wondering why we're in so many different wars and problems and so on and so forth, there's a group out there called the Council on Foreign Relations. Maybe some of you have heard about it, but it's the most pervasive and most influential group of people probably in the entire country. And they influence the foreign policy of every president in the last 30 or 40 years, 50 years, even going back to Woodrow Wilson. And they say that as America becomes an increasingly multicultural society, it may find it more difficult to fashion a consensus on foreign policy issues, except in the circumstances of a truly massive and widely perceived direct external threat. And they have always been the ones who have advocated America is at war, must be at war, must go to war. Spiro Agnew, who was the U.S. Vice President back in under Nixon, as you remember, was resigned and indicted for bribery. Well, back in November 13, 1969, he stated in a speech, "The American people should be made aware of the trend toward monopolization of the great public information vehicles and the concentration of more and more power over public opinion in fewer and fewer hands." Now, here is a guy that the media hated, partly because he told the truth on a lot of issues and lied about a lot of other things. But in this case, I believe he was absolutely, positively on the money. And I'm going to repeat that because I think it's so important. "So the American people should be made aware of the trend toward monopolization of the great public information vehicles and the concentration of more and more power over public opinion in fewer and fewer hands." The next statement I want to read is from Edward Bernays. Now, he was the father of modern public relations and the director of the U.S. Committee on Public Information during World War I and on government propaganda. Okay? He was the father of public relations. He said, "The conscious and intelligent manipulation of the organized habits and opinions of the masses is an important element in democratic society. Those who manipulate this unseen mechanism of society constitute an invisible government, which is the true ruling power of our country. Our minds are molded, our tastes are formed, our ideas suggested, and largely by men we have never heard of." That was Edward Bernays. Died in 1995. Lived a long life. He lived into his 90s. 1891 to 1995. Probably scared to die. You gotta wonder what people like this think when they die, what their last thoughts are, you know, and how responsible for the manipulation of millions and masses of millions of people and hurting them, you know, understanding how to herd them and how to hurt them for your own benefit or the benefit of your clients, the elite clients that you have, or the federal government. We only have a few more minutes, but I have a few more quotes that I think we'll be quite amazed at. And this one was from Zbigniew Brzezinski. And he was the author of Technotronics and the Grand Chessboard. To put it in a terminology that harkens back to the more brutal age of ancient empires, the three grand imperatives of imperial geostrategy are to prevent collusion and maintain security dependence upon the vassals, or to keep tributaries pliant and protected, and to keep the barbarians from coming together. Now, he wrote that. Now, Zbigniew Brzezinski is a very famous man. He was Carter's national security advisor. And for those of you who don't know, his daughter, famous daughter, is Mika, who co-hosts the Scarborough show there, Joe in the Morning there, Coffee Joe, and MSNBC. And in the and he also states, and this one is really frightening, especially since Brzezinski is the current advisor to Barack Obama. He says, in a technotronic society, the trend should seem to be towards the aggregation of the individual support of millions of uncoordinated citizens, easily within the reach of magnetic and attractive personalities, effectively exploiting the latest communication techniques to manipulate emotions and control reason. Yeah, man. And he did exactly that in Obama's election. He took a guy with a magnetic personality and used the highest technical communication devices, including, his Blackberries and, the internet and everything else, and created this character that we have called Barack Obama. And in his final statement here, he says, the technotronic era involves the gradual appearance of a more controlled society. Such a society would be dominated by an elite, unrestrained by traditional values. Isn't that amazing? And that's exactly what we have. An unethical group of elitists who are controlling our world. And here's another mastermind thought by Brzezinski. Here's one by Winston Churchill that everyone would know. The story of the human race is war. And that's by Churchill. And we're about at the end of the show. I think that's about it. And I'm going to leave you with this one last word. Two, actually, from J. Edgar Hoover and one from Adolf Hitler. It states, the size of the lie is a definite factor in causing it to be believed. For the vast masses of the nation are in the depths of their hearts more easily deceived than they are consciously and intentionally bad. The primitive simplicity of their minds renders them a more easy prey to a big lie than a small one. For they themselves often tell little lies, but would be ashamed to tell a big one. by Adolf Hitler. And J. Edgar Hoover, former head of the FBI, stated that the individual is handicapped by coming face-to-face with a conspiracy so monstrous he cannot believe it exists. Man, are we there now? We are there now. And for those of you who might wonder what Mr. Kissinger thinks about you or about the people in the military, he states, military men are just dumb, stupid animals to be used as pawns in foreign policy. Now, this was the bastard who was responsible for the Vietnam, for keeping the Vietnam War going and the murder of 50,000 American soldiers. He is also the, you know, this guy is Satan, all right? In fact, I think he's worse than Satan, okay? And he also said, I really have to say this. Today, Americans would be outraged if the UN troops entered Los Angeles to restore order. Tomorrow, they will be grateful. This is especially true if they were told that there was an outside threat from beyond, whether real or promulgated, that threatened our very existence. It is then that all people of the world will plead with world leaders to deliver them from this evil. The one thing every man fears is the unknown. And when presented with a scenario, individual rights will be willingly relinquished for the guarantee of their well-being granted to them by their world government. That's where we're headed, folks. That's where we're headed. And he also said, and you got to remember, he's probably one of the greatest architects of the global government, of the One World Order. And he also said, New World Order cannot happen without U.S. participation, as we are the most significant single component. Yes, there will be a New World Order, and it will be forced, and it will force the United States to change its perceptions. Henry Kissinger said that at the World Affairs Council press conference, April 19, 1994. He also said, if you control the oil, and you can control entire continents, control food, and you control people. And Mussolini stated, fascism should be more properly be called corporatism, because it is the merger of state and corporate power. And that's exactly what we have now. Exactly what we have now. There's one I should say too. Adam Weishaupt, who was one of the founders of the Illuminati. He says, O mortal man, is there nothing you cannot be made to believe? And Adolf Hitler said, what luck for the rulers that men do not think. And Napoleon, which I mentioned earlier, stated, history is a set of lies agreed upon. And with that, I end tonight's quest for truth, understanding how desperately we are being lied to, how viciously we are being manipulated by our leaders, those we elect appoint. And there can be no denying this, folks. So I want to thank everybody for listening. I hope you learned something.